The next case this morning is 06-2271 and 06-2393. Jack Advent, executor of the estate versus Allstate Insurance, and representing the appellant, Mr. Gonzalez.
Good morning. May it please the court. We now turn our attention to the glamorous world of uninsured motorist coverage. Thank you for this opportunity. I would like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal if I need it at the end.
It'll be your responsibility to
watch
Honor. Your time on that.
I believe that if this court is consistent in its prior decisions and does a plain and clear reading of the statutes that apply, I believe that we'll all agree that Allstate cannot, during this 2-year guarantee period that's applicable in this case, reduce my client's uninsured motorist coverage. That's basically the issue here. Now, any discussion, I think, should start with what do we all agree on as far as the policies and the coverages and the time frame, and just briefly so we can have some perspective. The deck page in the Advent's policy had liability limits of 300, 500. The uninsured motorist limits, however, were 50, 100, and this started back in 1989. So I think that we can all agree that from 1989 until Senate Bill 97, the Advents had the higher limits as a matter of law because Allstate didn't comply with the statute that said there was a mandatory offering.
And state again the period of time that obtained.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
The period of time that obtained with this policy. Going back how far?
It went back to March of 89 would have been the first policy, the initial policy. And then if we count 2 years, our 2-year guarantee would be March of 01 through March of 03. Now the accident occurred in there, Senate Bill 97 occurred in that time frame, and 2 renewals occurred during this time frame.
So for 12 years or so, the policy stated one set of limits, but by operation of law, the coverage was at a different level.
That's correct. And I may add, factually, there were no reduction forms, no waiver forms, there was nothing written, there was no indication that the Advents had ever asked for the lower limits. It just, that's what was on the declarations page.
If the higher coverage was only available by operation of law, wouldn't the change in law supersede that simply because it wasn't a contractual issue? It was implied by operation of law, but then that law itself was changed before the accident.
I'd answer that in 2 ways. First of all, the law that gave my clients the higher limit by operation of law was a court decision. The law that took it away, Senate Bill 97's changes to the UM statute, was a statutory change. And this court in Ross and then in Wolf and then recently in Shea said that statutory change doesn't come into effect till after the 2-year guarantee period. So I would agree with the court that at the end of this 2-year guarantee period that's applicable in this case, there's no more operation of law. The Advents then have the deck page limits. Before the end of that 2-year period, Allstate cannot incorporate 97 into this policy because we have a guarantee.
So Shea is your strongest position, really?
I think, yes, and Wolf. I actually see this as very factually similar to the Wolf case, but I think that Shea did help in that effect. And I think that's the problem that Allstate has in this case is that you have Ross and Wolf saying we have a 2-year guarantee and statutory law will not come into effect until the end of that 2 years. Now, what I think Allstate wants to do is they want to look at this amendment at, for Senate Bill 267 that amended a different statute, amended the 2-year guarantee statute, and added this subsection E. And Allstate wants to try to fit the facts in Advent into this subsection E. And the more I look at it, the more I'm convinced that this just isn't a subsection E case. First of all, Allstate isn't incorporating anything into my policy here. Well, we know that the only way Allstate can incorporate a policy change to the contract, the policies of the contract, is by endorsement, and that didn't happen. Second, what is Allstate really trying to do? There isn't a provision in this statute that they're trying to write into my policy. It's not an anti-stacking or a definitional change or any of those type of procedural things. What they're trying to do is they're trying to do away with this concept of coverage as a matter of law. So E talks about policy changes that are required or permitted, and that's just not the case here. We're not policy changing, or we're not incorporating.
That's your view. That's critical to Allstate's position. If E applied, their position would be that semi-annually there is the opportunity to modify the coverage language, but for 2 years, I think that's their argument. For 2 years, you're locked in to offering a policy, but you can, on each six-month date, is that?
That's Allstate's argument. It says, you know, basically, we know E has some application in the real world because it's there, so something can be incorporated in at six-month renewals.
Do you agree that under E, they could make certain changes by handing or mailing to the insured an endorsement that says we're making the following changes in your
policy?
Yes,
absolutely. Absolutely. You know, E has to mean something, and we were struggling with examples of what E might allow, and I would think the anti-stacking issues and the subsequent amendments or the prior amendments might be something, but
and
E has limitations to it is what we're arguing in this case. You know, first of all, I would tell you that because subsection A of that says that there's a two-year guarantee, and that guarantee is non-cancellation within those 2 years. That's the guarantee, non-cancellation. Cancellation means, written into the statute, a reduction in limits. So E can't apply to anything that happens with a policy that reduces the limits because that would be a cancellation. So to answer your question, I would say if it's a non-cancellation issue, Allstate can incorporate it at the 6 month.
But then when you get, I'm sorry.
Where do we look to find that last proposition that non-cancellation relates directly to you can't lower the dollar coverages?
Right. 3937.31A, which is the two-year guarantee statute, which was amended by 267. The first section in that, A, talks about what is guaranteed for 2 years, and it has the language in it that says that it has to be the same coverages and the same, and then they can't reduce the limits of coverage, that is a cancellation by definition.
Okay.
So then that statute changes, but they don't change that language in A, they add subsection E. So what I'm arguing is to reconcile those two subsections, you gotta read E is not applying to cancellation type issues.
Your client bargained for the 300, 500 liability and 5,100 uninsured and knew that that's what his coverage was, correct?
I don't believe that's correct.
He testified that he knew that that was in his policy.
Your Honor,
ignore the operation of law argument.
I am, and I'll answer that question this way. My seven-year-old could tell that there's difference in the policy numbers. That doesn't mean that he bargained for it.
All right. He paid a premium based on 500, 100,000.
He paid a premium based upon
100,000. We created a doctrine called operation of law, which during the period of time that doctrine was in play, increased those limits because of the various case law that we came up with that created that doctrine, correct?
Correct.
When the legislature said that doctrine no longer applies, there's no such thing as operation by law, there's no even requirement for uninsured motorist coverage, why do we not revert to the benefit of the bargain, what your client bargained for, which never changed and is still in the policy and is still at 50, 100? Why is that not what controls, because it's the written document and it's the premium your client paid for, and the legal underpinnings of operational law have been taken away by the legislature.
It's been taken away, and I have to answer that three or four different ways. First of all, I take issue with the bargain for, and I know that that's in all the briefs, that somehow Mr. Advent bargained for this, but we know since 1989 that the bargain for lesser limits, you need certain things, a knowing, intelligent waiver or reduction. There has been no evidence in here that Mr. Advent knew what he was bargaining for, knew anything about UM coverage. That has not been disputed. The only thing that they can point to is that he can read the deck page and see that the limits are different. So I would take issue with the underlying proposition that there was some bargain here at any time. Second, we know that on 312.01, this is before Senate Bill 97, that my client has the higher limits. He has them until Senate Bill 97, which is about 9 months later. Now, how does he lose that? What happens in this two-year guarantee period that he loses it? He didn't bargain any different. He didn't do anything different. All that showed up was a new policy that was renewed. So nothing between the parties have changed. And I think that the only other way I can answer this question is to get to where Allstate wants to be. And your proposition, Your Honor, is you got to overrule Ross and you got to overrule Wolf. Because Ross and Wolf tell us that the law in place at the inception of this new two-year guarantee period applies all the way through that guarantee period.
And is the legislature permitted to change that?
And they have, but it won't affect my policy until after the two-year guarantee, because the legislature's never changed that. I mean, that's what the law is. There's a two-year guarantee for non-cancellation. Even if we have this coverage as a matter of law, or if we have this coverage stated on the deck page, reducing it is a cancellation by definition.
Counsel, I take it then that Allstate done something different than I think they did here, that is at the six-month period that intervened, had they sent a notice to your client saying the legislature has changed the law and you no longer have the coverage that you had by operation of law or by
right.
result of a Supreme Court case on under an uninsured motorist coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And you're only covered to the extent that it's
stated
always said in your policy. So, you know, you may want to do something about that. So, some notice.
Sure.
Had they done that, would they be in the clear or would they still be bound?
They'd be violating subsection E of 3937.31 that says you can't cancel the policy during a two-year guarantee period. So that would not be effective.
It's not, in your view, it's not a matter of absence of notice.
Right. It's a prohibition.
Or absence of specific notice.
Right. There's a prohibition against cancellation. That's what this case boils down to. It's a cancellation. I reserve some time for rebuttal.
Mr. Gonzalez,
yes.
The cancellation reduction equation that you keep making, where precisely is that found in the statute or the case law?
Okay. If you look at 3937.31A, you'll find it in there.
When? I mean, what version are we looking at?
We're looking at the 267 amendment, so that would be the current law.
And you're saying subsection A talks about both cancellation and reduction.
Right. It says in subsection A that cancellation includes refusal to renew a policy with at least the coverages and policy limits provided at the end of the next preceding policy period. The next preceding policy period in this case had the higher limits by operation of law. So the fact that they're reducing it tells me that it says that you cannot do that in subsection A. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, you've reserved about a minute of your time. Okay, Ms. Waller.
Thank you. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Monica Waller, and I'm here on behalf of the appellee, Allstate Insurance Company, in this case. The issue before this court, the certified question, that is whether the Senate Bill 97 amendments can be incorporated into a policy with a two-year guarantee period that begins after the effective date of Senate Bill 267, but before the effective date of Senate Bill 97. If the court is to give any effect to the Senate Bill 267 changes that were made to revise Code Section 39, 37, 31E, the answer to the certified question has to be yes. First, looking at the plain language of the amendment to Senate Bill 30, or to revise Code Section 39, 37, 31E, that section says that nothing in this section prohibits an insurer from incorporating into a policy any changes that are permitted or required by this section or other sections of the revised code at the beginning of any policy period within the two-year period set forth in Division A of this section. If that wasn't clear enough, the legislature also added a comment that specifically said that it was the General Assembly's intent to allow insurers to modify the terms of a terms and policy and conditions of a policy to incorporate statutory changes. One step further, this court recently in Shea versus Shea analyzed what the General Assembly was doing in Senate Bill 267. In a decision that was written by Justice O'Connor, this court acknowledged that Senate Bill 267 was a demonstration of the legislature's, quote, strong dissenting opinion in a response to Wolf. Clearly, this court has acknowledged that through Senate Bill 267, the General Assembly indicated that it disagreed with the court's position in Wolf and intended to change it. Having recognized that the legislature intended to change the holding in Wolf, it would be a rejection of subsection E for this court to continue to apply Wolf to policies with the two-year guarantee period beginning after the effective date of Senate Bill 267. Not only is rejecting that provision of Wolf consistent with Shea versus Shea, but it's also consistent with what the districts have done generally in these types of cases. Six of appellate districts have considered whether Wolf continues to apply post Senate Bill 267. Five of those districts have concluded that Wolf is no longer good law, at least the provision of Wolf that requires an insurer to wait until the end of a two-year guarantee period before incorporating new law. The only district that came to a different conclusion was the 8th District in Storer versus Sharp. However, it should be noted by this court that in Storer versus Sharp, the 8th District did not even include any analysis of the impact of the subsection E that was added by Senate Bill 267. In Shea versus Shea, this court considered a policy that had a guarantee period that began before Senate Bill 267. In that case, this court said that the Gladys standard for overruling precedent had not been met in that case because it was before the effective date of the statute. I would contend that now, since we're dealing with a post-Senate Bill 267 policy, the Gladys conditions for overruling precedent do apply. As this court is aware, those conditions include that the decision was wrongly decided at the time or changes in circumstances no longer justify continued adherence to the decision. Two, that the decision defies practical workability. And three, that abandoning precedent would not create an undue hardship for those who have relied upon it. With regard to the first element, circumstances have changed to no longer justify the continued reliance on Wolf. Again, as this court has recognized, the legislature took steps to change the law in response to Wolf. Second, the decision defies practical workability. It defies practical workability because to continue to apply Wolf would be to flatly reject subsection E that was added by Senate Bill 267. Finally, abandoning the precedent would not create an undue hardship on those who have relied upon it because there is a bright line date after which Wolf would no longer apply.
What is your best response to Mr. Gonzalez's argument that we shouldn't apply E because E is in conflict with A, and his view of A is that a reduction in the amount of coverage available by operation of law can't be affected because of the policy terms?
Well, if we look back at what happened in Wolf, this case, this court did say that changes in the law could not be incorporated within the two-year guarantee period because it was a violation of subsection
yes.
A. In response, the legislature added this subsection E, and it, important for the court to recognize is that the first line of subsection E says that nothing in this section, meaning revised code section 39, 37, 31, is meant to prevent an insurer from incorporating changes in the law. By referring to this section, the legislature was sending the clear message that it disagreed with this court's position that incorporating changes in the law would amount to a reduction or cancellation of coverage. In addition, I would propose that Senate Bill 97 did not, in fact, amount to a reduction or cancellation in coverage.
Well, he's arguing that he had 300 to 500, and now he's 50 to 100, and that in effect is a cancellation.
And I would present to the court that we disagree with his position that
you
there
disagree,
was.
Disagree, but what's your reasoning?
Well, we disagree with, first of all, that there was 300-500 limit UM limits before the passage of Senate Bill 97. The higher UM limits would have applied, if at all, if an accident had occurred before the effective date of Senate Bill 267, and at that time, Allstate had been unable to present a rejection form. We know that Allstate ultimately, in this case, was unable to present a rejection form, but we don't know for the fact that it was never signed in the first place. It simply wasn't available at the time. Our position is that if UIM limits arise by operation of law, it occurs at a definitive point in time. That is, once the insurer is unable to produce the rejection form. In this case, it doesn't start from the beginning of the policy and continue throughout until there's an accident.
Counsel, I'm wondering, just stepping back from the complexities of the law and thinking about a citizen goes to their insurance agent for coverage. When did this policy start? When did this relationship with this insurance agent or with this company start with respect to this family?
With respect to the Advents in 1989, Your Honor.
And when was it the law, by virtue of decisions of this court, that the coverage for UM and UIM had to be the same as the liability coverage or be waived?
Well, it was the law that the insurer had to prove an offer or rejection of UM limits up until the passage of Senate.
So in 1989, when this couple first presented themselves to this insurance agent, it was already required.
Yes. Right. I believe so, Your Honor.
And you were able to discover nothing in the file that indicated any explanation for this. So I'm wondering why is it a failure to educate your agents? What is it that would have you with a policy out there with coverage that exceeds what you have on the face of it, and presumably, as Justice Stratton pointed out, collecting a lesser amount of premium than you're actually providing for in coverage?
Well, we don't know what happened back in 1989 when the Advents went to their agent. We know that Mr. Advent knew that he had lesser UM limits than he had liability limits, and he knew that he was paying a premium based on the lower UM, UIM limits.
He saw the front of the policy, or the renewal notices, yes.
From the renewal notice, he knew that from the inception of the policy from back in 1989 all the way through to the date of the accident. We don't know whether back in 1989 a rejection letter was offered. We don't know whether...
Given the absence of it in the record, isn't the presumption that it wasn't? I mean, that's your burden, isn't it?
Well, the court, we were unable to produce the rejection letter at the time of the accident.
So as far as we know, because we deal with the record we have, it's not there.
Correct, Your Honor.
I guess I'm trying to get my mind around this sort of notice thing. You're providing this coverage by operation of law. Now the law changes, so it goes away by operation of law, legislative enactment versus this court's decisions. Why, if at the next payment of premium, which you say is the renewal every 6 months, why wouldn't your company at least tell folks the legislature's now changed the law? So if you don't have coverage in your policy for UM and UIM that equals the liability coverage, you just don't have it. And you and your agent need to talk about whether you are covered at the level you want to be covered. Well, why shouldn't the company do at least that much?
Well, as a matter of fact, in this case, Allstate did do something to that effect. At every renewal from the time Senate Bill 97 became law until the date of this accident and afterwards, Allstate sent a notice to its insureds that said the procedure for reducing or obtaining or eliminating UM coverage has changed. It's no longer required to be in writing. We advise you to take a look at your policy, determine whether you have the UM-UIM coverage that you intended to have, and if not, give us a call.
And that's in the record that notice was...
It is, Your Honor. It's in the supplements that were issued by both counsel. While it didn't specifically refer to Senate Bill 97, I think in effect it does the same thing, because it did warn consumers to look at your UM coverage, make sure it's what you want, and if it's not, let us know. And in this case, Mr. Advent was asked during his deposition whether he received those notices. He testified that he has no reason to believe he didn't, because he received the policy and it was in the policy, and he acknowledges that. And then he knew what his coverage limits were.
Oh, it was in the policy.
It was a notice that was sent with the renewal policies, Your Honor. Your Honor, also, when we're looking at whether the changes to Senate Bill 97 are of the type that should be incorporated into existing policies by virtue of Senate Bill 267, we should take a look at the policy justification for the 39-37-31A that prevents reduction or cancellation of policies. In Wolf, this court noted that one of the purposes behind that subsection A to revise code section 39-37-31 is to ensure that consumers of auto liability insurance are able to maintain the level of coverage and policy limits that they had originally contracted for. In this case, again, Mr. Advent knew full well that his coverage limits were $50,000, $100,000. He paid premiums for $50,000, $100,000 limits.
Well, actually, he contracted for $300,000, $500,000. He just didn't know it.
Well, again, that's a point that we would disagree that he ever contracted for that he actually intended to contract for $300,000, $500,000. He never intended to contract for $300,000, $500,000. By operation of law, he may have gotten it, but he didn't intend to contract for it. The final issue that I'd like to address was the appellant's position that the only way to incorporate changes in the law would be through an endorsement. First of all, I'd like to take you back just briefly to the language of the amendment. The language of the amendment says that an insurer may incorporate changes that are permitted or required. It doesn't indicate that the incorporation is permitted or required. We're looking at the changes and whether the changes are permitted or required. In this case, we're looking at Senate Bill 97, which says from that point forward that an insurer may but is not required to offer UM coverage. The language of Senate Bill 97 is by its nature permissive. So it was among the changes that an insurer, that were permitted or required.
Ms. Weller, did the policy itself talk about any changes that would be made to the policy? Does it suggest that there has to be an endorsement or any type of written communication to a customer before the policy is changed?
The policy does say that any changes to the language of the policy itself must be done by endorsement. However, the changes from Senate Bill 97 were not changes to the language of any policies. The changes in Senate Bill 97 was a change in procedure, the procedure of offering UM-UIM coverage. So to address the appellant's argument that any change must have been through endorsement, it's inconceivable to do it that way in this case, because again, it wasn't changing any language, so there's no way to use an endorsement.
Because in your position, the declaration page always stood as it was, and there
Correct.
Was no change to the declaration page, but the by operation of law language changed through the adoption of subsection E.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
I see that my time's up. If there are no other questions, I thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Gonzalez. You reserved about a minute, so.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ever since I've been a lawyer, 20 years now, the UM statute has had this mandate of equal policy limits. It's been the law up until Senate Bill 97. I ask the court to be consistent with prior decisions, even if we go back to the Benson decision that Wolf narrowed down. This court recognized in Benson an insurer must provide coverage for a minimum of 2 years without a reduction of benefits. That's what's happening in this case. Wolf, you refused to allow Senate Bill 20 to be incorporated into a policy mid-year. In Shea, it was the opposite. The plaintiff was trying to get 267 mid-year. You didn't allow that. And now in the Advent case, Allstate's trying to get Senate Bill 97 during a mid-year, two-year guarantee period. And I hope that you rule that they're not allowed to do it that way.
Thank you, Mr. Gonzalez. The case is submitted. Thank you.